James Carlton is the interim executive director of the museum. How are you, sir?
I am good, Steve. How are you?
Well, you just heard radio at its worst. I mean, at its best. I mean, clearly.
I actually laughed at the penguin joke.
Well, one out of three isn't horrible necessarily. So you are an expert on what we're doing, talking on the radio. And, you know, to me, radio is the most intimate form of communication that there is. Television comes somewhat close, but there is nothing like talking on the radio. And if you're on the radio, particularly on a talk radio station like this, and we'll be talking to John Williams and Lisa Dent about this later in the program, when you're on the radio, people stop you on the street and they feel like, oh, I know you. We're just talking, you know, and WGN's very unique in so many ways. And that is one of the ways WGN is unique. But even long before, although we're about to celebrate our 100th birthday, and I don't know that you know this, but there's one employee that is still here after 100 years. Paul Lisnick is still here. But it's true. But the radio.
Well, radio. I was wondering why you don't have a gallery at the museum named after you.
No, Paul has a.
I told it.
Paul does have a. Is he paying you to say that? He does.
Yeah.
He does have
a
gallery.
He did mention you're a bit older.
Yeah, clearly you spoke to him. He does have a gallery. It's about the size of a postage stamp, but nevertheless, it's a gallery. Not nearly as wonderful.
It's a very impactful postage stamp.
Yes, yes, yes. But it's not nearly as wonderful as the radio exhibit that we're here really to talk about. So tell me about it.
Exactly. And first of all, you know, I love your show. I've been highly entertained while I've been getting my work done. And I feel like the museum is offering as much as your show is offering today. I mean, like you went from Rita Lee, which was so amazing to hear her reinforce what I had just seen, you know, on Being the Ricardos. And growing up with watching that show, it's just crazy because you would not think that Lucy was not just an adult and a woman who, oh my God, she had sex, you know, which was still disturbing for me, even in the movie. I'm like, wait, those beds cannot go together. But to hear all of that validated was just pretty amazing. But between that, men wearing underwear for mask and champagne and caviar, you've really covered it all. And I think, you know, we're doing the same, maybe not as funny, but we're doing the same at the museum with Ride the Wave, A Century of Radio. What's cool about it is it's really about trying to set the record straight. You know, it's not what I would call your typical timeline of a century of radio. It really gets into, hey, it wasn't always smooth sailing. You know, it's sort of like any, think of, you know, computer or tech or phone industries that were starting out, the web, like all of this stuff probably wasn't recorded correctly. A lot of people made it happen, but only a few people got the credit. And I think that's what this museum, this exhibit, is trying to do, is really get to the science, the people, and even the culture of what's happened, you know, in the last century of radio.
So when radio first began, it was a guy by the name, they say, of Marconi who began it all. I don't personally remember the story, though I remember reading about that story. And at first, radio... there was something that was done on the radio, and you'll have to tell me what that was, but very quickly it turned to drama and comedies, and like shows like Only the Shadow Knows or George Burns and Gracie Allen and Jack Benny as vaudeville performers then appeared on the radio. But there was, and then the farm reports began all the rage. You probably know this far better than I do. So, Is this about right?
Yeah, it is very much. It's right. And by the way, you know, I'm kind of new to this. I'm a late bloomer when it comes to appreciating everything that's radio. I joined the board of the Museum of Broadcast Communications about 2 years ago, and it's about 2.5 months ago that I was asked to be interim director. So I have a lot of catching up to do, but it's fascinating, and it really is interesting. And I do think when you grew up with radio, you mentioned it earlier, the intimacy of radio. I don't think any media, and it's, you know, I'm not the first to say it, is as visual as radio is. I think our brain fills in those visual gaps better than any director or producer could do it for us. That's what I think is great. And, you know, when I grew up, and by the way, I'm from New York. I'm sure it was WLS. It was WGN as well. We would get those frequencies in New York sometimes. And there's something about it, and I'd get it on AM stations. There's something about that AM frequency. Maybe it was comforting then when I was listening to it, whether it was sports or whether it was like someone like Dick Biondi or John Landecker. But today when I hear it, I'm so comforted. Like there's such a, I don't know what that noise is that AM is, but I don't know if it's something they'll talk about later in your show, but it's definitely something that triggers an emotion for me that just feels good, you know? So it's good, but I think you've got it right. You're pretty dead on. It didn't take long before people to really gather around the radio, not just for news, but for entertainment.
And you really could see on the radio, which sounds crazy. Got producers that are of 20-something that are looking at me like I'm crazy. But I'll tell you, let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. When Jack Benny went to his vault and went down the stairs, greeted the guard who has been there for like 75 years, you know, on the show, and then opens another creaky door, jumps over alligators, and you hear the alligators snapping to get to his money, and then finally gets there, and you hear the tumblers turn and turn and turn. You're picturing in your mind, and I once heard Benny say in an interview that he could never really reproduce it on television because it could never, ever be as good as whatever people pictured in their minds.
Exactly. And we know that today. It's just that we don't have the opportunity to do it as much as we were forced to, you know, or people were forced to back then. It's sort of like, think of ventriloquism. Like Edgar Bergen had a show where he had a dummy and he was a ventriloquist on the radio. Like that's, to me, so absurd, but it was the biggest hit and then eventually did go on TV. But that just tells you that the appetite people have for just good storytelling and to be entertained. And I think that's what they did. It's funny. I was thinking about when I realized today, it's not all an animal show for you or a pet show. I was thinking, how am I going to tie radio into dogs and cats? And it did make me think of Lassie right away, which, and again, Lassie's a little bit before our time, but a huge hit. You know, these were 10, 15 minute segments on the radio where kids would get lost in storytelling. And even today, that sticks with us. Like, how many times do you hear people talking about, you know, what is it, Lassie? What is it, girl? And it's this whole thing about Tinny falling in the well. People know these sort of quotes. By the way, Tinny never did fall in a well. That was never an episode. He fell in a lot of things, but he never fell into a well. And I just think, like, these things stick with us today is pretty amazing. And they're worth looking up. They are worth Googling. And they're worth us even doing, you know, shows or exhibits on it at the museum.
And I want to talk about an exhibit idea. But first, I'm going to walk over there, and I might fall into a well, and they'll pull me out when we come back right here on WGN. Steve Dale for Anna DeVlantis on WGN. We are talking with Jim Carlton from the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, who has to tolerate all this. But I think museum-worthy, Jim. I don't know. Are you there?
A very museum. Yes.
Yeah, there you are.
Still here.
Well, I'm surprised that you are still there.
I did not fall in the well.
Yes. So they pulled me out of the well. So tell me about the exhibit itself. You walk into the Museum of Broadcast Communications, and then what do you see?
I said there is something for everyone. First of all, when you first walk in, it's kind of great. We have sort of our Instagrammable moment, which is mandatory these days. We've got a set of 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s radios set up. And it's just beautiful. You know, they're very colorful, and they kind of set the tone for what you're about to see. But I'd say we have about 40, 50 radios set up just that hit you right away when you come out of the elevator.
Where did you get all these radios from? Did you go into an assisted living center and steal everyone's radios?
No, radios is something we happen to have plenty of. We must have 1,000.
What?
Different kinds of radios in our archives. And These are, mostly that were acquired or some were donated, and maybe a couple are on loan to the museum. But we're able to, those are, and they go back from the 20s and then probably from each decade after that.
All right, so you see
the
radios.
That really hits you.
Okay, you get hit. I hope you're okay.
You get hit and you're okay. And then there's also audio that goes with that, and there's sort of a changing in frequency sort of effect. And it's just the sound of radio through the decades as you start to proceed. And it's basically a classic timeline sort of experience where you go through the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s to today. But along the way, there are things to stop you, whether it's and it's digital as well as physical. We have a series of monitors that you can interact with and swipe and get deeper into as deep as we can. We have a series of those. As well as when you, as you get into the museum experience, before you get to sort of the decades, we have we're talking about last year. We have three nice little kiosks set up of premiums from, I'd say they're from the 40s and the 50s. Think of a la Christmas Story, Ralphie's Red Ryder BB gun, mm-hmm. where kids would, through Ovaltine send away and then listen to the radio program. In this case, it was Lone Ranger. And then play with their toy while they're doing it. Sort of a precursor to the Happy Meal business. I used to work on that as well, and just hugely popular and helping, I think, kids with that experience of listening and playing at the same time. But we have a nice set of premiums like that, Dakota rings and pins that were donated from someone else you might know from the WGN family, Carl Amari, who's also on the board of the museum.
What do you mean by Dakota rings for people who don't know?
Yeah, so back in the, and this would be 50s up until the 60s, you would send away and earlier, during the war, because it was a very spy thing during World War II, it was considered a fun little spy toy to have a ring that either had a secret compartment and you could hide messages, or there was, it's a language that you would learn over a series of time that a letter would correspond to a different letter. And if you look at these toys, they're very simple. Some of them are, they're beautiful though, and they're made very well. You could actually use them to start decoding messages that were sent either by the, Ovaltine in this case, or to each other, other kids that had these rings.
Yeah, it's very cool also hearing those old radio commercials. I love that.
Fun.
So, James, where's the Museum of Broadcast Communications located?
So we are downtown Chicago at 360 North State Street, right on the corner of Kinzie there and State.
Mm-hmm. Just down the street, barely from Marina City.
Exactly.
And how much is the exhibit?
It is free.
What?
As long as we can do it, we get by on donations and by, kind donations from folks like Bergen Foundation, Wintrust, Shure Microphone is a big contributor as well and supporter of the museum. But it is free, but you need to reserve online. So if you go to museum.tv and reserve, it'll take your information, almost like you're going to, put in your credit card information, but you don't. It's all about reserving a time and a space. And that's pretty typical within the museum experience.
All right. Well, you and I spoke off the air, and I feel, and I'm going to say this on the radio now, maybe it'll add pressure so this really does happen, but I feel it would be a wonderful opportunity. We have John Landecker. Clearly, he's here every night on WGN Radio, our own John Landecker.
Yeah.
Fred Winston is still in the market. He works. Dick Biondi's still around. I mean, we have these legendary, a handful of legendary performers. Tommy Edwards moved out of the Chicago area and is retired. But we've got these great, great radio people. Wouldn't it be great to bring them all together at one time for some sort of panel discussion and reminiscent? I think it would be amazing, and that would be that would be something I'd like to see at the museum. I'm a fan of the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Thank you very, very much, James Carlton. It is good to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on, Steve. I really, really do appreciate you letting me talk about the museum and what we're up to.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.